Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Brendan Hauser with Evoke Bike. We have an awesome podcast with Eric Bruner, who you may know from gravel. You may know as the U.S. National Cross Champion. You may see him on the mountain bike this year, and he also has quite a road career beforehand. So we hit on so many different topics covering all of those disciplines, but also talking about, you know, athlete entitlement. Do these athletes deserve to be sponsored and getting paid to ride a bike, and how do they provide value for their sponsors? And Eric goes on an amazing thread of training, talking about his threshold training, that he's not really big into periodized training, and other elite athletes sort of fall into this bucket. And he gives out Tom Skuhn's workout example that sounds pretty brutal, different ways that he rides endurance, progression through his training, how he stacks hard to easier days. He's experimented with 5 days on, 2 days off. He talks about working with his coach, Grant Holicky, who's come up before with the Cade Bickmore podcast, and just a myriad of other training topics and racing at the highest level. So hopefully you enjoy this one. Check out the chapters if you're looking for something in the nitty gritty, and thanks for tuning in.
Also, just it's like a nice vibe. Like, it seems like people are pretty relaxed, and you know, I'm not going to be like Keegan laying in bed, but
dude, I was actually going to bring that up when you were like, "Hey, I saw your podcast with Keegan." I was like, "Oh, Eric's coming on in bed." that kind of became the pro roadie flex. It was like him, Mason Holliman from Israel Premier Tech, and we're like, is this the new thing, like do a podcast in bed? I'm like, should I be in a bed? This, I feel out of place now. Oh man, where are you at right now?
I'm in Boulder. I'm at home. I'm at my parents' house. I actually just moved in with Finn Gullickson this week.
No
across
way
across town. But yeah, I'm at my parents' right now.
Okay. Yeah, Finn was on. That's awesome. So what are you guys chatting gravel strategy for this upcoming year? What's on tap?
Yeah, so we're gonna do a trip together. I'm racing Redlands with Primal Audi.
Okay.
And he may try and get on a team for that as well. And then we're both doing Sea Otter and BWR. So we're gonna do a nice road trip, and yeah, so I do a lot of training with him lately, Noah Grant again.
Very cool.
So we got a good crew in town.
Little squad out there. So let's actually start off with an intro for a few people that may not know who you are. And I don't want to introduce you, because actually that's one of my questions, is like, you kind of can do it all. So I'm curious how you describe yourself. So is it pronounced Bruner or Brunner?
Bruner.
Bruner. Eric Bruner. Who are you?
I'm a cyclist from Boulder, Colorado. Like you said, I really do it all. I've spent a number of years racing on the road. That was kind of my main focus as a junior in U23. I've raced cyclocross all along as well. I've won a couple national titles in that now. And I'm also into mountain bike, and that's my focus for this year. It's going to be my first year racing full-on mountain bike schedule. I did the Lifetime Grand Prix last year. Not doing that this year. I'm focusing on the cross country, and I'm really looking forward to that. I feel like it suits my skill set a bit better. It's more similar to cyclocross. It's an Olympic sport, so that's a long-term goal of mine, is to make the Olympic team. And yeah, and just continuing to do a bit of the other stuff to have fun. I think it's good training for me to do a bit of everything. So that's partly why I'm doing Redlands. It's just because I think there's no better training than racing.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you why you don't race on the road anymore, and clearly you do. So was the Olympics the draw to, was that in the back of your mind? Because I know some roadies who have flipped over the track thinking, oh, you know what, I could actually try and make an Olympic run here. Or is that just a little cherry on top if that happens? Or is that really a goal?
A bit of both, honestly. So I raced mountain bike national championships when it was in Winter Park. So that's, you know, 90 minutes away from me, 2 summers ago. And I had a really good time with that. I was third, kind of surprised myself. And I was like, you know, like this seems like something that I have some potential in. So that's exciting. And, you know, the Olympics is part of that, but I think just overall it's nice to feel like the effort's paying off, and that's a little bit more my skill set than the gravel racing. Not that I don't enjoy that stuff, but I think that if I were really to go for it again, it would be when I was older and just like had more miles in the legs. I think you kind of see a lot of the guys who are really successful at it are well into their 30s. They're kind of in the later half of their career. And, you know, use some of the snap that I got while I still do on the mountain bike.
Yeah. That's like, you're not taking a dig at the older guys, but sort of, it's like, well, they were in another discipline and now they're into gravel. So I'll just wait till I'm not good enough in the things I really like to do.
No, it's not a dig at all. I just think, I mean, you see that in running too, you know, people go from the shorter distances to the longer. It's just kind of
the progression,
just kind of how the body works, I think, for a lot of people.
Where does cross fall into that of like, what do you love the most right now?
I think cross is super fun. Unfortunately, it's hard to, you can't really have a career that's just cross. I mean, it is possible, but there's very, very few guys that do it. And I think you got to go to Europe for that, I don't know. And honestly, I don't think it makes much sense to focus on cross exclusively. I think that some of the guys who I've seen do that, I think it's honestly hurt them overall because they're just not getting enough racing in the summertime. So I'm moving away from cross a little bit in terms of how much I race. I still like it just the same, but honestly, the payoff is just not really there. Unfortunately, that's not really where there's a lot of interest in sponsorship. And so, you know, this year I raced about half of what I've done in the past. I took a bit of a break after Nationals in December. I didn't go to Europe over Christmas, and I just did 3 races at the very end of the season. Really, my main focuses were just the U.S. World Cup, the championship races, and then the last little bit in Europe in January. And so that's probably going to be pretty typical for me in the coming years. I think it's going to be important for me to take some real rest in the wintertime rather than just trying to race through all the time. And I always do rest, but sometimes it comes at a time that's not ideal. Oftentimes that's been like January or February, even a little bit into March. And so that's been pretty poor preparation for some of the early road mountain bike gravel stuff. And so that was part of my goal this year, was to come in to the spring hotter. I didn't take a break after Cyclocross World Championships. I'd already done that in December. And so, unfortunately, that just comes at a little bit of sacrificing the cross.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about guys when you were talking about that they might, you know, limit themselves by not having enough racing in the summer? What if they just kind of jumped into some road races? Like, I'll see Curtis White at some road events kind of randomly. And when you say they're missing out in training time or in like race intensity, or what do you feel like they're missing out from?
I think the intensity, and particularly what I like is stage racing. And it's, you know, it's hard to do though, if you're, I don't plan to be on a road team. It's not something that I've gone after for the last several years, but at the same time, I don't think gravel is so great because you just don't do so many races, and the races are so hard that it's more like recover, like rest into it, recover after. Mm-hmm. And so I would almost compare gravel, going along with the running analogy, gravel racing is a bit like racing marathons or Ironman. You can't do quite so many of them because they're so long and taxing. Whereas even road race, I mean, road race are long, but they're a lot of them are 3-4 hours. So it's easier to do more of those. And I just think it's a bigger training benefit.
Would you ever go back to the road, or do you have any love for
I
road warrior?
would be open to it, but I think the only way that I would do it is if I had a setup where I was able to do off-road racing as well.
So that's really more where you want to be at.
I don't dislike the road. It's just it's oftentimes pretty consuming to be on a road team, and you gotta kind of race the full schedule. There's not
Right.
so much room for doing other things.
When you were talking about Europe for cross, would you ever want to go back, and did you like being in Europe when you were over there, or is that kind of something that didn't resonate as much? You're like, ah, I think I'm going to stay stateside if possible.
I do and I don't. I like Europe. I like being over there. I think it's important to have a good group of people around and like not just go over by yourself. So I really enjoyed, like, this year I was staying with the Cervelo team and a couple of the CXD riders as well, like while I was in Spain. So my former teammate Scott Funston is on the Cervelo team now, and I know all of those people. So that was just a good time, and like nice to have people who I know from home around, people who speak English, all of that. I don't love some of the like Christmas time Belgium races. It's just not so much my style. I like the faster, drier courses. I just don't love the like super heavy, muddy stuff as much. And the weather can be a drag, just like the days are so short. So it's a bit of both. But then I was in Girona for a couple of weeks after Worlds, and like, that's like easy. Like it's 50, 60 degrees every day. It's pretty sunny. Like, can't complain about that.
Yeah, I was in Belgium for the fall 1 year through school, was not racing. And I grew up in upstate New York, where it's just cloudy and gray and crappy. And once the gray settled in there, and like just like you said, short days, I'd go to class, try and get a ride in. I'm like, man, of all, why did I love Belgium, but man, this weather is just a drag after a while. I can only imagine being over there getting throttled every weekend and trying to, just do these races that you're not loving. It's probably not the best vibe. Is it just, do you not do well in like super muddy, or you're just like, I just don't like this?
Bit of both.
Hmm.
A bit of both. And I'm from Colorado. Like, I'm just used to the sunshine. So it is what it is.
Yeah. So when does the, so I'm more roadie. So when do all the mountain bike races start, and will you be going over to Europe for those, or is that mostly going to be like US, Canada based?
So I'm doing a trip to Europe in June. My season gets going in a couple weeks with there's two US Cup races that are 2 weeks apart from each other. The first one is Temecula, California, like just south of Orange County.
Okay.
And then the Fayetteville a couple weeks later. And then I'll do Redlands. I'll do Sea Otter. And that's a marathon race. That's part of the Lifetime Grand Prix. So that'll be kind of fun to like throw down with those guys again, even though I'm not in the series. And then finish out that trip with the Belgian Waffle Run.
What are, for the mountain bike races, or even for Redlands, like what are your goals to get out of those early races?
Honestly, the first couple are just like seeing where I'm at, getting a few UCI points, just go full gas and like get some good training out of it. I don't have too much expectation for those. And then I want to do the Pan Am Championships. You got to like petition for that, but I don't think it's like a big selection thing. That's in Soldier Hollow, Park City, Utah this year in May. And then in June, I still am nailing down that schedule a little bit because it kind of I got to see where I'm at. But it's kind of nice to have minimal expectations in that way. So I'm going to enjoy that this season while I can. But I'd like to do a couple of the World Cups in June and a couple of smaller races as well. And just, because the World Cups, no matter how well I do in the States and how many points I get, I'm going to be starting from like maybe the middle, probably the back. So it'll be fun to try and do some smaller races where I can actually see the front of the race, hopefully.
Yes.
And then, yeah, the mountain bike season goes pretty late, and I am planning to do the World Cups in North America. So that's Lake Placid and Mont Saint Anne. And again, you know, got to get selected for those, but see where I'm at. But I think that's a possibility. I think it's a strong possibility.
Cool. Had brought up Keegan's podcast before, and you had mentioned, we were chatting, like some of those things in the off-road world. Is that more in the gravel world, in the cross world, mountain bike? I was curious where you're going with some of those.
Well, I think one of the lines that I remember Keegan saying is like, you know, do we really deserve to do this? As in, like, you know, are we entitled to be professional athletes? And that's something I think about a lot. And I think it's easy to get entitled and be like, oh, this is something I deserve to get paid for. And you know, I don't think any of us really deserve anything, right, other than our basic needs. So I think it's kind of up to the athletes in a way to provide value for their sponsors. But at the same time, like, I'm not a big social media guy. I don't really know. So that's something I'm still kind of figuring out, is like, what is my niche? And how can I give back to the cycling community? How can I promote myself and my sponsors, but in a way that's like really authentic and not just, you know, trying to sell their stuff to people who may or may not even be interested. So, and another point that Keegan made is that it's that middle level is so difficult, because the guys at the top, of course, they're getting paid a ton of money. And it's easy to find that sponsorship. I mean, maybe it's hard to fund a world tour team out of nowhere, but like there is money there. There is interest, because that's the highest level. And I think if you go to in either a cycling company that is one of the top bigger companies in the sport, or you go to a non-endemic sponsor who's like, I want to be in the Tour de France, that's where they go, is a world tour team. And in the off-road world, it's kind of the same. You know, you have the specialized, the Trek Factory teams, and those teams have massive, massive budgets for just, you know, half a dozen riders. And I think I have no idea what those guys make, but I think it's some of them, it's got to be close to World Tour guys, maybe not Jonas and Tade, but the guys just below that, but it really tapers off there in the off-road world. There's definitely fewer spots available. Like, and so if you look at the US equivalent, like if you're not Keegan, if you're not Alexi, you know, there's definitely guys and girls in the top 10 of the Lifetime Grand Prix who are, you know, they're probably making some money, especially if they've been doing it for more than a few years, but I don't think there's a whole lot of job security there either. And that's, you know, that's something that I've dealt with recently as well. So I've run a team. I've owned a team that was originally called, it's been called many things. It was Blue for a long time. It was WTB Pivot last year. And we lost the large, large majority of our funding last year. And so just decided to call it quits on the team. Myself and my coach Grant Holicky, who's the director of that team, and so that's something we would like to bring back in the future. And that was a great opportunity for us to great opportunity for ourselves, but also for other people. And you know, we had a number of riders, mostly U23s, on the team throughout the last 5 years. And you know, unfortunately, the cycling industry is just in a very rough spot right now. And I think it seems to me that there's less interest in the racing, and it's a little bit more, people are looking a little bit more at like the hard metrics of how many followers you have or how many views are you getting on your content. And I think that's fair, because I think these, you know, ultimately the sponsorship, the goal of the sponsorship is to create impressions and make money for these companies. But at the same time, my degree is in marketing, is worth saying. All of this stuff is just so difficult to quantify.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's impossible to say what is the actual dollar value of somebody seeing whatever. And so for me this year, it's a little bit like back to the drawing board of saying, like, you know, how can I promote myself as an athlete and differentiate myself? And, you know, of course you got to do the social media. At this point, it's just mandatory. But I have a lot of respect for guys like Alexi Vermeulen, who is, you know, with his From the Ground Up project, with Ryan Petrie, who actually lives down the street from me. Both great guys. And it's, you know, it's like, it's something that's a bit more tangible. It's a bit more real. And they've been really successful with it. And ultimately, I think that's kind of how you keep your job. If you're not just getting the biggest results year after year. And I think, I mean, the results are just so fickle, man. Like,
yeah.
So I think you got to look elsewhere a bit. And I also wonder too, like, I think the money in gravel has really come up quickly,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I think it kind of remains to be seen. Gravel reminds me a lot of triathlon.
Mm.
It is a very similar model where there is a high professional level, and then there's a ton of people who do it recreationally, maybe seriously, maybe just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a great model for the events. And I wish that like road cycling would get a bit more into that. There's that Grand Fondo in New York this year,
mm-hmm.
and which has a UCI race. First of all, it's the same day as Nationals.
Robin Carpenter posts that. He's like, who is doing this? Why is this the same exact day? This is insane.
It's silly, right? But I think there is something to that where, and I think that's how it's got to work in the U.S. because cycling is not really a spectator sport in the U.S. It's a participation sport. Mm-hmm. So how can we get people to participate? And that's the problem with cross, is people just don't participate in it so much anymore. It used to be a bit more, but it's never been like a super mainstream thing, whereas gravel is actually kind of breaking into the mainstream, I think. But just like, you know, triathlon has had its waves of popularity too. So I hope that Lifetime and, you know, these other people in gravel are able to find some sustainability in it and not just do it for 5 years and then disappear.
Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar. What's Alexi's From the Ground Up project?
So he and Ryan Petrie have, for the last 3 years maybe, they've taken a handful of beginner amateur cyclists, people who maybe have a slight cycling background, definitely not racing, and they've helped them to train for and try to finish Leadville.
Mm, very cool.
So, you know, they give them bikes and they are helping them with their training, their how to prepare, all this stuff. And they've done some movies about it.
Okay.
So, and it's, I just find it like, I think it's kind of inspiring that, and again, going back to the participation piece where it's like, yeah, Leadville is like one of the biggest, hardest races in the world, but it's also pretty accessible to anybody out there who wants to do it. So
what about like thinking about content and stuff, even if you don't want to, if you're not too into social media, I mean, you have the street cred, we'll call it, of whether it's cross, road, you'll be doing these mountain bike events and doing well on those. And it's like just talking about the products that you really like and the ones that you go reach out to these brands and you're like, hey, I love this. How can I work with you guys? I mean, I'm sure they would love to have someone that of your stature. And, you know, it's, I think people sometimes think that every athlete that reps a product is automatically getting paid, whereas it should more be like a commission based, like, hey, let me help you build your brand and then pay me, you know? And that's where like the codes come into play and like help bring new athletes into the fray. And I think it's because then there's no, you can like be honest with people about it. Just like, hey, totally. I use this. This is something that I love. I reached out to them. And if you want to give it a shot, cool. And if not, okay.
And like one of the really good things about having run my own team for the past years is I've been able to continue with a number of those sponsors, even now that I'm just on my own.
Okay.
So Shimano, Stages, others. And those are some brands who I first of all have a great relationship with. I know the people there well. But you know, that's stuff that if I wasn't getting it for free, I would still buy it. You know, like it's genuinely what I like to use and what I think is the best. So that's something that is cool about being an individual athlete rather than riding for a team is you get to have a bit more choice and agency over that stuff. And, I'm pretty particular about it. So that helps, both from a performance standpoint, a mental standpoint, you know.
So is privateer a term in the mountain bike world, or is that, are we leaving that in gravel? I like that you said individual.
I'd like to leave it in gravel, but I think it applies.
So when you're 30 plus and you're retired and you go to gravel, then we can call you privateer if you're still rocking it that way.
I just think it's funny because it's like, for a lot of people, what's the other choice? Like, yeah, there are teams out there, but
yeah,
if you're just going to a gravel race, like you're for the first time, you're probably not going to be on a team.
Right.
So.
Do you think gravel has hurt cross here in the U.S., or is it just maybe a decline on its own if it's kind of fallen off? Or
no, I mean it sucks a little bit to see guys like Kerry Warner not be in the cross scene so much anymore, Tobin, Ortenblad, but you know, I think they have found some opportunity in gravel, so I don't think that's like, you know, I think they've found more opportunity there. So I think that's, in a way, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hurt cross a little bit in the sense that like a lot of companies don't even want to make or market a cross bike anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of standing here screaming like, it's the same thing. A cross bike is a gravel bike. Yes, there may be, you would prefer to have something slightly different, but like, I don't think that 95%+ of people could even tell a difference, honestly. And like, I've ridden the same bike for cross, gravel, whether it's designated as a cross bike or a gravel bike, you know, maybe I put a little shorter stem on for cross, you know, obviously it's tubular tires that are smaller, the gearing's a little different, but I mean, it is the same thing, man.
We were just talking about this on our coach's call. Your name had come up that I was going to be chatting with you today. And my buddy Will Harden, who does kind of like you, does a little bit of everything, races with Miami Knights now on the road. And he had said, he's like, I might buy a gravel bike to be my cross bike. He goes, I see less off-camber stuff here, which is like the biggest reason I needed a cross bike. And it really, I would have another bike that can do a lot more. So I'm surprised to hear you say that. So would you buy a gravel bike and just the gravel bike you'll have this year, would you just rock that as a cross bike now?
Yeah. Ooh. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. So, like I was on, just starting in January 1st, I was on Trek, for the end of the cross season. And you know, I don't have an official deal with them, but they were kind enough to help me out. And so I have a couple of boons, and like that's what I'm gonna ride for gravel. You can't fit huge tires on them, but it's like what I'm doing. I'm probably not even really doing any gravel races this year that are real gravel races. So I'm doing BWR and Steamboat. Like that's like a road bike. I can fit like 36 mil road tires on my road bike. So that's probably going to be what I'll do for those.
When you brought up guys like Kerry, do you feel, and we're talking about sponsors a lot, do the sponsors try to navigate you guys a little bit that are these multi-disciplined athletes? It's like, hey, Eric, you know, you could go do this race for us. Or how vocal are they? And maybe that's included like when you were running the team.
Some more than others. Some are totally just like they know what you want to do and they don't really say much. I think when there's more money involved, and then they have more specific objectives. I honestly like when a brand has more specific objectives. I think it helps me to know whether I'm like doing a good job or not.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, WTB and Pivot's big interest was the Grand Prix. And that was, but they weren't opposed to cross. It wasn't like we have a bunch more money for you guys to do cross. It was just like, you know, here's the budget for the season. You know, here's our main objective. You can do other things if you want, but you know, the main focus is the GP.
Okay.
Which is fair. I don't think that's a bad approach.
Yeah.
That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah. I agree. It's nice when there is some direction or you know what their goals are rather than hey, use our product and talk about it and cool. See you later. It's like, okay.
Exactly.
You had some back pain, right? Was it the end of last year? Are you healed up from that?
Yeah, it was pretty short lived. You know, I think some of the times that I've dealt with that, it's been heavily correlated to stress.
Mm.
And it's been also much, not that I haven't had it at various times, but it's been by far the worst in Europe in some of those really, really heavy races that it's almost impossible to get here in the States. And like just doing a bunch of races like back to back or doing, you know, three or four races in a week, that's when it has been tough for me. So like trying to think what races those were. It was like Havre, which is the heaviest, hardest course. Like
when you say heavy, what do you mean by that? Just
so like the mud is thick, it's really slow, like peanut butter mud, really slow speed. So you're turning over a big gear, likely a lot of running. And so all of those factors are present at that race Havre. And so that was my first one that kind of just put me in a bad spot for the rest of that trip. Bike fit is pretty important. I think sometimes my just instinct has been to run my saddle a little bit higher than it should be. And I think you can get away with that on the road, but once you start like trying to push a massive gear and you're bobbing a little bit, dropping the heels a little bit more, that's aggravated my back a bit. So addressing the bike fit a little bit, and honestly just like stability, trying to keep a good pedal stroke. This spring I've been doing a good amount of torque efforts, so like really locate like 50 to 60 RPM around threshold or a bit below, and then also some like big gear sprints. So just start from a stop in like the biggest gear and wind it up. And I think that's pretty helpful for fatigue resistance, but also just having good form when you're trying to push that really big gear out of some of the corners, or just because in cross, there's times that like you just can't really shift. It makes more sense to just stay in the same gear. And you see some of the top guys, it's like it almost seems like they're riding too big of a gear. But I think really it's like they're trying to put power down and in suboptimal conditions, you know, where the bike maybe isn't working ideally because it's so dirty. Or the speed changes so quickly, rather than trying to run through your whole cassette when you're in deep mud, or you're going from flat to a steep uphill to steep downhill and back. It just makes more sense to have an ability to ride a really varied cadence.
How long in duration do you do those types of intervals? I'm always curious, like, what do you work up to? Is like a, what's a big day of low cadence, high torque work?
So the workout that I've done is 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off, and two sets of four efforts. So 8 by 3 minutes total. So it's a bit shorter than like a normal threshold workout, but it's hard. It's definitely like, feels like you've been to the gym after you do it. And it's a little bit easier muscularly, harder aerobically at altitude, obviously. So I found it was maybe like I was getting a little bit more out of it when I was at sea level, but I just think combined with like lifting, it's still good. And you know, like some guys talk about like doing torque efforts at like 40 RPM. I think at that point you're better off just going to the gym. I think it's important to maintain some degree of like cycling specificity.
I'm smiling because I was just talking to my coach Landry, who coaches with us, and I'm down in Florida. I'm like, where did the torque stuff go? And he's like, well, you really can like barely get to 60 RPM there. I want you doing these at like 45. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. That sounds terrible. And
it's all flat.
It's so flat here, man. It's like you just cruise at 22 miles an hour on a recovery day, and it's crazy. So I'm missing the mountains, but soon. What has kind of been a thread through your training from all these different types of disciplines? Like, what's your, no matter what you're training for, what's some of your go-to sessions?
That's a good question. You know, my training honestly stays, last year was the most change that I've done to my training because I was doing the Grand Prix as my big focus.
Okay.
And so I have a really good top end. I maybe don't have the best, like, and my threshold's good, but I don't think I have the best endurance compared to some of these guys. So that's really what I was working on, is just stacking the volume and doing a lot of like threshold efforts, like super fatigued. Normally though, my bread and butter is usually pretty much doing like one sprint workout a week. Sometimes that's a big gear stuff, but more often it's just like a normal like 6 or 8 by all out sprint. Like, and maybe that's coming in or out of like a little bit of threshold to have some fatigue. If you do like a sprint into threshold, that's a pretty good simulation of like a start of a cross or mountain bike race. And just your ability to both sprint and then settle in. And during the cross season, I'll do it as like a start practice. And so I'll be doing more of that now that I'm racing cross country, and it's kind of a similar dynamic at the start. So not only do you get the high power, but it's like, you got to start from a stop. You got to be able to shift through the gears, and just something that I find with that is it's really important to keep the cadence up, just to be able to accelerate as quickly as possible. And then I do a lot of workouts that are kind of combined VO2 threshold. So a typical one would be like 40-20s. Maybe 10 or 12 40-20s into like 4 minutes of threshold straight in. And usually that'll be, I'll do varied length efforts though. So maybe it'll be 50 tens, a set of 50 tens, a set of 40 20s, a set of 30 30s, or maybe even 20 40, any of that stuff. And then settle into threshold for a little while. I have a workout that I've got from Tom Skuyans, who's where it's he told my coach like this is like the only workout he really does a lot of the time, and it's so freaking hard, man. It's the one workout that I do where I feel like it's like pretty easy to fail on it. I don't do a lot of workouts that are just ridiculously long. I do, if I want to make it harder, I'll do it at the, I usually do my efforts at the end of the ride. But if I'm really trying to like go to failure, I'll just go a bit harder, or I'll add a bit of like climbing tempo, like in the earlier portions of the ride, rather than like just try to do like, you know, an hour straight of 40 20s or something like that. Anyway, this workout is 2 minutes threshold, low cadence, like 60 RPM, 1 minute out of the saddle. And I'm usually shooting for about 120%. So I'm doing that, like, definitely try to keep it above 400. If I'm feeling good, 450. And that's for a minute. And then 2 minutes tempo, which is just like a slight recovery, but it's not great recovery. And you do that twice in a row. And then I'll do that maybe like three times. So it's like 30 minutes of just like super hard. And, you know, Tom's like, if I know I'm like feeling good, if I'm like, can do like 2x20 of that. I never really try to do more than 10 minutes in a row. I think it's, also though, like with any threshold workout, it's like trying to go just slightly harder is going to knock the amount of time that you can do way down.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of have different focuses. Like if I'm trying to, I try to keep that like a little bit of a, what am I training for in the back of my mind? So if I'm training for cross, I've done different variations of that workout where it's shorter, but it's kind of the same like theme. That makes sense. And it's maybe I'm repeating the same cycle, but it's less time in each, but it's harder.
It sounds like you're very flow. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It sounds like you're very flowy, like with your workouts when you're talking about, hey, like I might ride a little threshold before this. I might ride a little bit of tempo. And then if it's more cross, maybe I go a little bit harder. Or is that kind of accurate? You're not like super rigid. It's blown.
No. And I think there's a lot to be gained from just like listening to how your body feels. And like, so for example, on my endurance rides, I, you know, sometimes I'll just be trying to get the time on the bike in. And sometimes I will be trying to stay on the pedals and coast as minimally as possible and keep the average power really high. And I think there's benefit to both of those things. And I think, you know, you got to just look at what are the key sessions for the week, you know, try and pick probably like 2 days that are the most important, and everything else is, it, you know, it's okay to, be a little bit cooked for everything else, or maybe not be nearly so focused in those if you can give 100% focus to those key sessions. So another big theme in my training is like, I think this is pretty normal, but like going from high intensity, low duration efforts to higher duration, lower intensity as the training block goes on. So first day would be sprints, second day would be VO2, third day would be threshold, fourth day would be endurance. And maybe it's not 4 days, but just keeping that general idea, because you, in order to do the high intensity, you need the quality there, and you can't do that if you're fatigued. Just riding endurance, maybe the power is going to be lower if you're tired, but you're kind of getting the same benefit. And I think that you even get more benefit for, you get the same benefit for less effort almost. I think you get more bang for your buck. And you just got to remember that, like, the goal of training is to be tired. Like, you got to rest at some point, but it's okay to be tired, and it's okay to feel pretty bad for a significant number of your workouts. And you just got to figure out what is that point where the quality is too low and it's time to take a rest. So that's something that I've gotten better at. And my coach Grant Holick and I have a great relationship, and it's like, you know, we're kind of just more like friends now than coach and athlete. I do pretty well with giving a lot of suggestion, kind of saying like, how about we do this? Last year I did a long period of time where I was doing 5 days on, 2 days off. And that was, kind of inspired by the speed skater, Niels Vanderpool, who I would recommend to anybody listening to look up him and his paper that he wrote.
Manifesto.
Yeah, he's the Olympic champion in speed skating. And just really a cool guy, because he is, I mean, one of the best athletes in the world, and he has such a good attitude about what does sport mean in his life. And he really seems to get a lot out of sport, but he also has room for the other things, and he doesn't make it his whole life and personality that he's a good athlete. And so I think the 5-2 was pretty sweet in terms of, I'm somebody who maybe gets a little bit of an inertia when I'm training. I don't like to take too long of breaks, because then I'm not motivated to come back, and the rides just feel way too long if I've taken 2-3 weeks off. So it's nice to like get in that 5-day and be like, okay, it's the work week, like time to go. And then on those 2 days, just really be able to check out for like, you know, almost 72 hours and prep food, hang out with friends, just have free day, work on the bikes, work on, you know, send emails, do other work, whatever. And that was pretty nice. I found it was a little harder to get the quality in. I don't think you can do quite so many intervals or like strength work or stuff like that. So, I mean, like with anything, there's trade-offs, but I think it's good. It's almost like you get a little bit of that stage race benefit in training. And it was also just good from a mental standpoint, where like oftentimes third day, I would do like 2 big days the first 2 days, third day would be a little bit lighter and I'd feel horrible. But then fourth day would roll around and be like, oh, I'm like good again. I just found it hard to eat enough during that time though. Because, rather than being able to replenish the calories on a rest day after like 2 or 3 days, it would, the fifth day I would very often bonk or you know, tell it I was getting there. And then I was just so tired of eating that oftentimes I would not eat enough on like the first rest day. So that caught up with me a little bit. And that was, I mean, part of that too was just trying to ride more, trying to eat more, to keep up with the demands of gravel racing. So I think if I was doing that with a little bit lower volume approach, it wouldn't be so bad. But I definitely got like borderline too light last summer, just because it was hard to keep up with that. So lessons learned. I think in the future, like I would do that again, but maybe only for like 3 weeks at a time, not like 2 or 3 months.
So many questions for you. So what's the 5 days, how much volume would you do in 5 days then? Because you added a good piece there, like if you're doing less volume it might be possible. I think someone listening is like, oh, I could do 5 days at 2 hours each, but are you doing like 4 or 5 hour rides each day, or was the third day less in volume, or how did that normally shake out, or what kind of worked maybe?
Yeah, It was, first of all, I don't do crazy training volume. I just never have and have for different reasons. I don't like it that much. I have found my sweet spot to be like, if I'm fit, probably 18 to 22 hours.
Okay. I mean, I think, yeah.
So it's a lot, but it's not like for a pro, it's not like
right.
remarkable at all. So a lot in 5 days, 20 hours would be pretty typical. Probably like most of the days around 4 hours, one day shorter, maybe one day a little longer.
Okay. And then you had mentioned the gym at another point. Were you trying, you said there's a trade-off. You weren't really lifting then. Do you like lifting? Are you going to lift this season? Where is the gym play into all this? And maybe it depends on the time of year.
I do like lifting. I try to be consistent with it. Last year, I focused much more on the volume, and I was kind of getting to the point where I was just doing one a week. Nothing super intense.
Do you think that helped or hurt? Sorry to cut you off. I'm curious. The one a week I always struggle with, and it's every athlete's different, but then sometimes, like, if you're doing once a week, you're trying to do everything in that one day. And how did it work for you, or were you like, eh?
Sure. I think once a week is a tough spot to be in. I think it's like enough to see, like, to maintain, but I think it's hard to see much progress.
Okay.
And, you know, and it's not enough to, like, if you're trying to progress, you're not, like, maybe you're still getting sore. And so that's tough as well. I think twice a week is the sweet spot for me, and maybe a third day of like just a light core workout. Twice a week is usually what I shoot for. I don't do a ton of upper body anymore. I used to more. I try to just focus on getting like full lower body. I always do a little bit of arm, but it's like, you know, one or two sets, not one or two sets, one or two exercises for like, you know, three, four sets for the workout. And just to maintain the upper body strength, like that's something that's always been, I haven't had a problem with, like, at least for a cyclist, you know, I'm like ripped or anything, but, you know, obviously for what I do, the legs are by far the most important, and just the core stability. Foot and ankle stuff is something that I've tried to focus on too the past couple years a lot as well. I think there's a benefit to cycling. I think cycling just doesn't do anything for you there. And like, I've gotten pretty into running both as training and just for fun. And like, I'm like, okay, I gotta like do something here because it's hurting my running.
So what kind of foot and ankle stuff?
Like calf raises. Okay. Like, and just trying to, mainly what I do is like a single leg, bent knee calf raise. So to target the soleus, which is really important for running. And like, so like when I do efforts running, like that's what just wrecks me is my soleus gets so sore. And just trying to do it very slow and controlled, and it's pretty surprising how difficult that can be, to just maintain your balance, especially if you're holding a bit of weight. And then just like the kind of classic running exercises, like towel scrunches with your toes, or picking up like just your big toe or just your small toes while leaving everything else on the ground. I also think yoga is good for it, just doing balancing on one foot. Maybe your eyes are closed, maybe you're trying to do something else. Change positions while you're still on one foot.
You're going to have a lot of people doing some weird stuff during this podcast. I'm trying to do the big toe right now. I'm like, oh, this is way more challenging than I expected.
At first, it's like, I was like, is this even possible? But like, yeah.
I'm like, looking at my foot. I'm like, don't move. Come on. You can do this. Have you ever done any hip-specific stuff?
Hips, yeah. I think my hip flexors have been a bit of a limiter as well. And When I first started lifting, my glutes were horrible. I think anybody who gets farther along in their cycling journey kind of realizes that at some point that the glutes are so important, but it's not our natural instinct to use them so much on the bike. So like hip thrusts, you know, you can go heavy on those. And a lot of times at home, I just do like a single leg hip bridge, the hip flexors, like V-ups or just leg raises. You can do it with like a leg raise with a kettlebell as well. And then lateral stuff is pretty important too, and we tend to neglect that so much as well in our sport. So like monster walk or just plyos, like jumping side to side, I think is nearly as important as up, down, forward, back. It's I don't think it's so important for cycling, but at some point, like, you got to be well rounded. And it just is going to help a lot with stability, injury prevention. Something too that I like doing with the strength that's helped. I've had some knee pain at different times in like the top inside of my knee, and I think largely that's due to just getting tight adductor and quad, especially the VMO portion of the quad. Something that's helped me with that is, first of all, not ramping up the volume too quickly. I think just like after a break, that's when it's hit me. The knee pain is hit is if I just do too much too soon. But like a Bulgarian split squat, because that really challenges you to keep your knee tracking correctly, that a lot of other exercises don't. So just doing a split squat and being very, very strict about your knee staying stable and not coming in towards the midline. And if your adductor is weak, it's not really an adductor exercise, but if your adductor is weak, you're going to feel it on that exercise. So, and another good thing for the knee stability is just like using a band on your squats or whatever, just to keep the glutes activated, keep the knees tracking properly.
I feel like I'm talking to my PT right now, because these are literally all the things he's telling me, because I was dealing with QL pain that I had in 2021. It resolved, it came back on the other side, unfortunately, and I I did the wrong things. And so I've been learning way more about my lazy glutes, lateral movements, just everything you said. I'm like, that's my prescription right now. So it's been a lot of mat work and things I don't love doing, but I hate having back pain. So I'm looking forward to getting rid of that.
Yeah, the QL is something that I haven't had like too bad of pain with it, but it's something that's got sore for me at different times for sure. Especially with like running uphill, and the heavier pedaling and cross, like I was saying. So yeah, I think the hip hikes and just, you know, side to side hip stability is important.
Steve, it's very interesting to learn more too about the neuromuscular system's role in all this, and the body being relaxed and how we actually fire, like tell our muscles to move, and some of the movement patterns they'd asked me to do were so clunky and weird that I'd watch a video, I'm like, wait, why can't I do that? And it's just things are not firing properly. And it's been really educational. I mean, I hate to go through it, but I've been definitely learning more about myself as an athlete, which is always kind of a cool part of the experience. So yeah, here's to staying healthy for both of us this year.
Yeah, man, I think that's something that I really appreciate about being an athlete, is like I've gotten to know my body so much better. And like you're saying, like there's so many different, the body's so complex, there's so many different movement patterns that we should be able to have access to, and just learning how can we best tap into all of those. And I think, you know, the large majority of people are probably deficient somewhere. So it can be frustrating, but it's also really rewarding to like start to understand how to move better and how can, if you have an issue, how can you address it?
Mm-hmm. I think that's, I know the lifting and strength is cycling kind of pushes back on this sometimes. And then sometimes people that accept it are always saying, well, it's got to be only cycling specific strength. And I'm sort of definitely doubling down now on, I want to just be a strong human and then I'll have less deficiencies, less problems. I mean, I'm 42. So I also am fighting this like age thing that all the masters athletes I talked to, like, wait till you're 50, dude. And I'm like, I come on, give me 8 years to get there. But they do all these other things that most of us don't do so that they're still smashing, you know, tons of miles into their 60s. And so it's just been really interesting to hear younger athletes talk about this, older athletes, where everybody kind of comes in, and just cycling seems a little bit, I don't want to say behind, we just don't naturally accept it, even though we're one plane. And it's like, of any sport, we should want to be doing these other things. So it's good to hear someone at your level and experience talking about this.
Totally. I mean, and I think no matter what level you're at, don't you just want to be healthy overall and like live as comfortably and healthy as you can to the mm-hmm. to the oldest age that you can? And yeah, maybe you don't want to put on a bunch of upper body muscle if you're trying to be a climber, but like, you're not gonna, like, it's hard to put on muscle, man. Like, totally. That should not be anybody's concern. The concern is like, if you want to do that, how do you do it and how do you eat enough? So
yes,
I think that some strength work is a good thing for everybody, no matter what your goals are.
So I have one last question about the kind of scheduling your rest. And you talked about obviously the 5 days on, 2 days off, and kind of that you like this inertia that you get in a groove and you go. Does Grant tell you kind of when to rest, or do you say, hey, let's do this? What do you want now? Like 3 days on, a day off, or how do you work that out now? What's a good sort of plan?
Well, it's a bit of both. I definitely at times will be like, okay, Grant, I need a rest week now, or I think I'm doing this race and this other race, and so it makes sense to have the rest here. We try to get ahead of it and try to plan out, like, I'm not doing like super complex periodization.
Mm-hmm.
The training does change throughout the year, but it's not like, oh, this is the pure base phase, this is the mm-hmm. pure like VO2 phase. So you know, going back to the inertia comment, I think I would prefer to just maintain some of those abilities all the time, and yes, I'm going to focus more on some of them at one time or another.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of these studies about periodization have been done with athletes who are not at such a high level. Mm-hmm. And that's really one of the big struggles, I think, in sports science, is it's hard to do studies on high level elite or professional athletes because they're just not willing to mess around and do wildly different training for a long period of time. So a lot of the evidence that we have is either from amateurs or it's more anecdotal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why coaches still have such an important job, even though we know so much about sports science now, is it's their job to discern what might work better or worse for each individual. So lately I've been doing just pretty normal, like two rest days a week, like Monday, Thursday, or, you know, it's usually what I do. But shorter breaks, more frequent breaks, but shorter. So like this week I've had just four rest days, and that's about like a once a month occurrence for me, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't like to keep going so long that I forget what I feel like when I feel good. Mm-hmm. I think it's important from a mental standpoint, but I also think it allows me to just be able to focus for those, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. And then this weekend I'll do like normal training. I'll be back to normal. So it's not, yes, it's a rest week, but it's not a full week.
Yeah.
And I've really like that. I feel like I lose less. I don't really lose fitness. I'm still at the point where it just the rest is almost purely a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is just from my own personal experience. It's just something that I figured out over time. And I don't love being off the bike for like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I've done a lot of those breaks in the winter and also at the end of the summer, in years past, like between the seasons for me. And I just find like at a certain point, my mental health starts to suffer a bit. My mood gets worse after maybe a week. I think those breaks are necessary, but I almost think they're more mental than physical. And I also think you just got to look at your goals and like, yeah, maybe having a month, like quote unquote off season is good for people who just race road or their season is more of an annual cycle. Whereas I'm almost on like this semi-annual cycle. And so that's made my breaks have to be shorter from the first place. But now like, actually, I kind of figured this out when I was doing the Grand Prix was like, okay, I have a race give or take every month. That's very important that it's not like I'm saying I'm peaking six times a year, but I am kind of tapering for all of them. And I do have to do a serious rest after, I mean, at least like Unbound and Leadville. I mean, those races just destroy you. So I would have like 3 days off and I'd come back, probably do like a hard sprint or VO2 session, just to get the legs going. And I may or may not feel good on that one. And then the next few days, I just feel incredible. And I like actually see the level increase from month to month. And so that's been helpful for me. And obviously it's an ongoing process of figuring that stuff out. But at the moment, that's what I've really been liking is the, you know, about a month and then about a half of a week off. And that's, you know, like after a stage race, like after Redland, that'll probably be a similar deal. Like hit that really hard, 3 days rest. And then
do you, on those 3 days rest, do you go fully off or do you just do recovery rides?
I just do it by feel, honestly. I mostly ride every single day. Usually on these breaks, I will take 1 or 2 days off the bike. And most of my easy days, I'm doing anywhere from a 40 to 90 minute spin. And maybe if I don't ride, I'll like go for a hike or something, or I'll do half and half.
Mm-hmm. I think your comment on the periodization is really interesting. And I think this will resonate, especially for newer cyclists that are listening, that it's at least when I first started, it was like, okay, I do 4x8 and then I add in 2 minutes, I do 4x10 and I do this and this is how I progress. And now I'm going to do my VO2 max block. Whereas the more experienced athletes, it's sort of, as you said, you're kind of working a little bit of everything and feeling, okay, what races do I have come up? What do I feel like is sort of maybe feeling deficient in your riding? Like, what do you just feel like you're missing? Do you feel like that is an accurate way of saying kind of like the gauges that you use with Grant to base what you're going to focus on? Like, it's just, you get up to a certain level of fitness and you're like, okay, now we're really like fine tuning as we go towards these events. Is that accurate? Or did I kind of mishear that?
Yes. That, I mean, that's exactly what it is for me.
Okay.
And I would agree for probably the majority of people who I know. I think a lot of people do more periodization, but I think at an elite level, there's actually less interest in that. I would guess. I don't really know, but I also think that for a lot of riders at a high level, you are trying to be pretty good for a pretty long period of time, like maybe 6 to 10 months out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like, when is the time to do that?
Right.
When is the time to just go out and ride, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours every day and do no intensity? It also is what I found is it's like what people like to do. you got to like your training to some degree. I think some people can just tough it out, but I mean, that's not me. And I'm not getting paid enough to like make myself hate the bike. I'm trying to enjoy it. So there's that. And you just got to believe in it. I think right, everything tough. Works. Everything works to some degree. But you got to enjoy it and you got to believe in it. So, I mean, the mental aspect is just so, so important. And in terms of what I do to do progressive overload, it's adding a little bit more volume as I get fitter and in the summer, but that's almost purely just volume, just zone two. And it's just doing the efforts a bit harder, just a bit more power. Maybe it's a little bit more, but it's not more sessions because I'm almost always doing probably three, maybe four sessions of intensity a week. And they're not, you know, sometimes that's like 6x5 sprint.
Okay, that was
It's not crazy.
So it's your sprint to VO2 to threshold to endurance type thing that you mentioned before, maybe. Something of that. Okay, yeah.
And if I'm trying to, like, you know, when I was in Girona, for example, that was like the rare time where I'm just like, just trying to do some riding. And I was doing like two sessions a week. And maybe it's more just like free form, like go do some tempo climbing. But it's really varied. So some of the workouts really are like full gas and for a long period of time. And sometimes it's just like, get that, you know, a little bit of quality sprinting and that's the job for the day. So, you know, I think another thing that I found is it's consistency is so much more important than like any one workout. And so rather than trying to complete every workout perfectly, especially from like a power standpoint, I always try to get the time at intensity done. But you can't control how you're going to feel. I think you can get to a point where it's pretty predictable how you're going to feel. But in order to be fast, you got to feel bad at certain points. So just accepting that and being like, well, power's a bit lower, but the heart rate's there, the perceived exertion's there. I mean, and to me, like the time and perceived exertion is like, that's the gold standard. Like that's.
I loved what you said a little bit ago. Talking about coming off these breaks and you might go do a sprint or VO2 and you're not feeling that great. So many athletes will look at that as like, oh, I failed today. It's like, dude, you went hard. It's not, you're not setting a PR after these 3 days off. Like we're just getting back in the flow of going hard. And then the training jumps off from there. And you said, you know, hey, and then 2 days later, I'm like, oh, I feel amazing. So I think this is, you've mentioned a few times of like feeling kind of crappy or just not great is so important for people to hear because we all want to be setting PRs and feeling amazing every day. And that's just not training.
No. And you can set yourself up for success by like sleeping plenty and eating well and eating at the right times. But, you know, ultimately you're hopefully going to feel bad, right? Because you're riding hard enough to create adaptation. So, you know, and how does that work? It's by stressing your body more than it thinks it can handle. And creating inflammation, creating stress. So that is a good thing. And so in that same vein, I think it's worth saying, like, I think during training, like, you know, I do stuff to recover maybe mentally. And I like using like Normatex, or like doing some stretching or yoga, but like, I'm not going to take like anti-inflammatory. I'm not going to like use CBD and stuff like that because the goal isn't to decrease inflammation. Inflammation is what creates adaptation in your body, and that's a good thing during training. Maybe during a stage race, you want to like, you know, have an ice bath or have CBD or something like that. But you know, in training, it's like, yeah. So
I was like adding turmeric to my stack of things that supplements. I'm like, because of it reduces
inflammation. Well, and that's an interesting example, because I feel like that's like a pretty nutritious thing overall. So yeah, maybe I wouldn't be taking it purely for the anti-inflammatory, but it's also just like, I don't know, like I would
we're
part
on
of a
board
healthy
we're on
diet
board with
too,
that.
like I don't know. Yeah, and it's like, yeah, like, and eating like some good Indian food, but like, is, you
There you
know,
go.
is great. So
You
yeah,
strike
that's
me
an
as
interesting
variety.
example.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just said that's an interesting example. I hadn't thought of that one.
What you strike me as like variety is just something you enjoy, but also you found success with in training and how you live as an athlete. Is that an accurate statement?
Totally.
Yeah. And I guess to how you are as a racer, you're like kind of doing all, we just got to get you on a track bike.
Yeah, man. Maybe one of these days.
Eric, this was so awesome, man. I really appreciate you coming on. I want to respect your time. And anything that we didn't hit on that you want to pass along to the people that will be listening?
No, I think that's everything I wanted to say, but you know, I'm sure there's more we can find to talk about, especially about the training or the strength or the, you know, the periodization of
Nutrition.
intervals.
Oh, man.
Sure.
I would love, maybe we can circle back when you finish the first mountain bike season full on. I know people will want to hear about that, and we can hit on some of these other topics if you have time. It would be amazing to have you back. Yeah, you go on some really good threads of training that people will definitely be listening to this one, like rewinding, like, wait, what did he say? I gotta like take notes on this. So, actually the last question, best way for people to keep up with you, we'll put your Instagram on, which is kind of how we connected. Do you blog or tweet or anything else like that?
No, Instagram is the one. I've started a Substack. I haven't posted anything on it yet, but I'm getting that together, and I am kind of into writing. So,
Cool.
look for that soon.
Awesome. And will you post about that on the Instagram account so people can just follow you there?
Yes.
And sweet. Everybody, give Eric a follow. We'll post a link below, and we will talk to you soon.